Morning, everybody. Everybody's doing well. I'm going to talk to you about the reading that we just heard from the book of Genesis. And just hold on one second here. And we're reading the story of Joseph today, kind of the end of these, what we call the stories of the original patriarchs and matriarchs. So I'm going to talk to you. I'm just going to remind you what I was talking about, which is this. I now know it's a syrup boat, syrup boat. This is the syrup boat, gravy boat. Whatever. And the fact that this has been handed down to me from my grandmother, who died as a very young woman in the 1920s. She had very young children. She she contracted something that we don't have anymore, which is called scarlet fever. She had been out herding the cattle. And got cold and wet and got very sick and died very suddenly as a very young woman. So you think about your family and you realize that events that happened even in this case almost 100 years ago still continue to have their effect. That's how closely connected we are with each other, is that everything we do, or especially significant things like that, it's kind of like you drop a pebble into a pond and the ripples continue out. And I can see, as you can see in your own families, probably things that happened a long time ago has still ripple out and still have an effect today. So as I was saying, I have this precious gift of this woman who died that I never knew, who died many years ago, that's been handed on to me. I mean, it's not a great value financially, but it's a value in our family sentimentally. I have this gift that's been passed along to me, and I just hope that I don't drop it or I'm going to have to call on the Japanese artist to fix it up for me. The reason I think of this is because of the story of the matriarchs and the patriarchs, which kind of come to a head today, and that God has given this family a very precious gift, more precious than even a syrup boat. The gift that he's given from the time of Abraham and Sarah, the gift that he's given them is the promise. And from God's ear to Abraham and Sarah's mouth, not a general vague kind of thing, but a promise that says very specifically, I will make a great nation of you, and you will be a blessing to the entire world. And what he means by that is that since the fall, the world has been alienated from God, and people have been increasingly alienated and in conflict with one another. And God has a solution to this, and that is he speaks this word into the ear of Abraham and of Sarah and says, I have this promise for you, and you're going to be the conduits of this promise, which eventually is going to bring the reconciliation, the healing of the entire world. Now that sounds great. The problem is, and we see it passed on from generation to generation, the book of Genesis, that sounds great. But the problem is that he's decided to give it to a family. And one thing you'll notice about reading the Old Testament, I think sometimes people go, why the heck are we reading the Old Testament? These characters in the Old Testament are not really that great. You know, they're not. You know, I think we approach the Bible sometimes and go, well, you know, this needs to be edifying. And these characters in the book of Genesis, particularly, or really throughout the Old Testament, are in some ways not that edifying. The reason they're not that edifying is because they're just like us. They are ordinary people. I mean, sometimes they seem, because it's the ancient Near East, they seem even worse, to tell you the truth. But they're ordinary people. They have their ordinary loves. They have their ordinary things that bring them together, you know, care of their family, care of the land, all the things that we have, the desire to flourish. And they also have the things that aren't that great about us. They're competitive with each other. They're jealous. They're manipulative. If you want to see that at work, look at the story of Jacob and Esau, and how their mother and father set them against each other. That's pretty interesting. In literature, they talk about people being flat characters, which means they have one characteristic or round characters, which means they're very complicated. And they're round characters. They're just like us. They're complicated. So God, out of his, you wonder what he was thinking, decided to pass this blessing along to these complicated people in these complicated families, just like us. As well as, of course, that's not the only thing to say about them, as well as this profound blessing, which is the theme song of their lives, which is deeply rooted in them, and which is the purpose of their lives. Even if sometimes they forget about it, I often think of the, I don't know if anybody here likes jazz, but I often think of the example of jazz. If you're playing jazz, there's a tune and then there's the improvisation, right? So if you're listening to progressive jazz, there's a lot of improvisation. Sometimes you go, well, what the heck was the tune anyway? So their tune is the promise that has been given to them. Sometimes they get a little bit carried away in the improvisation, so they forget what the tune is. And we see that a lot in Genesis. And we see it today. Maybe this is this promise is continually in danger, it would seem, as it's passed from generation to generation. And no more so than today, when we have the story of Joseph and his brothers. And that is that Joseph's brothers have decided at one point they're so full of envy. He's a special favorite son, wearing special clothes, kind of a bit of a tattletale, maybe a little bit arrogant. And so they decide, well, you know, Joseph, we have a little surprise for you. It's at the bottom of a pit. They're going to kill him. They decide to kill him. They're so sick of him. They're so full of envy and bitterness and resentment. They decide to kill him until one of the brothers, Judah, finally says, okay, how about if we just sell him into lifelong slavery in Egypt? How would that be? And everybody goes, not quite as good as killing him, but I guess, okay, I guess we can do that. And so this, you can see this promise that's been given to this family that they're passing along in real danger. Until finally we have the scene that was set aside for today. And that is the brothers who have wanted to kill their brother Joseph are sent down to Egypt to look for food. There's a famine and they're desperate. The Egyptians have food because they've put so much in barns and saved it all. And they appear before the Egyptian prime minister, who is this haughty, arrogant, elite Egyptian who won't eat with them because they're ritually impure, like just this very arrogant kind of distant figure. But what they don't know is their brother Joseph. And of course, the reason they can't recognize him is Joseph is no longer a Hebrew. He's an Egyptian. It's something we could easily miss in this story is that Joseph seems like a pretty perfect character, but he isn't. The thing that's imperfect about Joseph, he's also been damaged by all this. And the way he's been damaged is he has become pretty thoroughly an Egyptian. He's even married the daughter of a Egyptian priest, worships a false god. You can see how Egyptianized he's become so Egyptianized, his own brothers won't recognize him. So this is the point where things kind of come to a crisis. And you're going, there's these brothers who tried to kill Joseph. There's Joseph himself, thoroughly Egyptianized. The family is in crisis. There is no way this family can resolve this. You can't see any way they can resolve it and carry the promise ahead. So how can this possibly move forward? I don't know if any of you remember Matthew 18. So somebody I know who worked for worked in HR in an airline, said, I've got this great process to resolving conflict. And he said, it goes like this. This is what we're going to do with this conflict in this major Canadian airline. So you can probably guess which one it was. And he said, what we'll do is if you have a problem with somebody, you should go and talk to them. And if that doesn't work, you should bring a couple of other people along to mediate. And if that doesn't work, we'll bring in people from the company to resolve it. And they said, who on earth came up with such a fantastic process? And he didn't tell them, of course. The guy who came up with the fantastic process was Jesus. It's in Matthew 18. It's a process for reconciliation. And at the end of Matthew 18, Jesus says, this is what you want to do. This is what you need to do if you're going to get your brother back again, if you want to win back your brother. So Joseph does something fairly similar. He sees his brothers. He remembers that he is a Hebrew. He remembers that these are his brothers. You have to do a lot of reading between the lines here because not much says what people are feeling. He remembers that there's a promise that he needs to carry along, and he decides to do the impossible, which is to reconcile himself to his brothers who almost killed him and did sell him into slavery, so much though that his whole identity has changed. So you go, well, you know, it's not always that simple. That's what you're thinking. It's not always that simple. And you're right. It isn't that simple. And because it's not this simple, and there are some people that it is impossible to reconcile with because of all kinds of, it could be dangerous to us or whatever. Because it's not that simple, Joseph tests them first to see if their hearts have changed. I won't go through it all, but you can read it yourself. He sends us through them this period of testing to see if they are the same nasty, jealous, envious, and potentially violent people they were. And the test is, will they allow Joseph's full brother, his young brother Benjamin, to be placed in danger so that they can be safe? And the answer is no. Judah offers his own life in exchange for that of his little brother. So Joseph looks at his brothers. He has to leave the room. His heart is broken when he sees them. His brothers look at him, who they don't even know who he is yet, and their hearts are broken because they say to themselves, the reason we're in this position is because of what we did to Joseph. So their hearts are broken with grief, and then things have the potential. Things open up at that moment. So there is transparency of heart. There is someone offering their life in exchange for another. And then as a result of that, there's reconciliation. And this haughty Egyptian stranger seems so hostile and so distant, becomes a brother again. I don't know if this sounds at all familiar. It's kind of the gospel, right? Ephesians says very clearly, Jesus' cross came to break down the walls which separate us from each other. And Judah, of course, is the one who offers his life, is the ancestor of David. Jesus, like even more so, a little pretaste of it, Jesus following, and even more so his ancestor, Judah, offers himself so that we can be reconciled to one another and be reconciled to God. And I love this phrase, confront each other with forgiveness. That's a phrase to meditate on, isn't it? Confront each other with forgiveness. As we head into Lent, how about we think about these three things as we head into Lent? We have a gift that we're carrying on, our own little gift we're carrying on, our own promise that's deep in our hearts, this gift that's been given to us. And that's a gift of our baptism, which is our promise that God has given us. So as we approach Lent, maybe we can think about these three things as we think about carrying on the gift of our baptism. within ourselves and with in relationship to one another. First thing is to ask Jesus to open our hearts so that we can be honest and transparent. You know, we're all human. We're all like this family in Genesis. That's just the way we are. And that's the truth. And Martin Luther says the number one rule of prayer is don't lie to God, because he knows the truth, good and the bad about us. Be transparent before God. That's what he longs for. Number two, to speak the truth as it is possible to one another when reconciliation is needed, is necessary, you know, in a wise and discreet manner, of course, to speak the truth. And number three, to be reconciled. First of all, to be reconciled to God ourselves, and then God will allow us to be reconciled to one another. You see, because Jesus has broken down the dividing wall that that comes between us. Let's pray. Jesus, thank you that you chose such fallible and ordinary people to carry your promise, because otherwise there wouldn't be much hope for us. Thank you for giving us the example in your word of these fallible people carrying on this great promise, Lord. Open our hearts so that we too can be reconciled to you, reconciled to one another, and give us the gift of the joy that comes from being in perfect peace and harmony with you and with our brothers and sisters. We ask this in your name. Amen.